Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing all right, Justin. How are you?
I'm okay. I've been excited to talk about the controversy at the Oscars. I, myself, absolutely cannot believe that Will Smith won an Oscar over Denzel Washington and Benedict Cumberbatch. I don't know. Everyone, what are your opinions? I thought that Denzel did a better job. I didn't think that Will Smith deserved the Oscar this year.
Wait. So my question is, which movie was Denzel in?
The Tragedy of Macbeth, and Benedict Cumberbatch was in The Power of the Dog.
Well, I've not seen either, and I didn't even know that Denzel was in a movie. So that's news to me.
Yeah. So all listeners, you know, you can weigh in on that huge controversy at the Oscars about who should have won Best Actor. So Aaron, tonight's case is sort of one of those folktale sort of stories where the man is fighting against the government and achieves this legendary status. But sometimes the legend or the folklore doesn't exactly match up with reality. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight we're talking about the murder of two game wardens by a man who refused to give up his old ways.
So this is in December 1981. A man named Eddie Carlin was out trapping on his land. And when you're out in this area, which is the Bull Basin in Owyhee County, Idaho, it's thick wilderness. There's not a lot of people around. So when you do come across somebody out in the wilderness, it's a little jarring and it's a little scary, especially when they're armed with guns and you're out there just trying to trap on your own land. So when Eddie's out there, he comes across people that have left traps there. He comes across poachers, and normally there's no problem. But on this day, he'd come across a man that kind of gave him an uneasy feeling. He came across a man named Claude, and this man had a .357 Magnum on him and was what people consider a trash trapper, meaning he didn't use modern day methods, and the traps that he would use could also kill other animals unintended for trapping. Just overall, it's a crappy method of poaching, which, again, poaching is when you're unlawfully hunting or trapping on someone else's land, or unlawfully trapping or hunting without a license. So Eddie is talking to Claude, and Claude kind of drops a few lines like, "I don't believe in laws set by man, and I've been trapping and hunting this land for my entire life and for generations." Of course, Eddie's sitting here going, "Well, your land is your land and my land is mine, and you're kind of on my land." But because of this unsettling interaction he has with Claude, he just says, "Hey, I'm going to just trap over here and we can just not step on each other's toes. So you trap over there, I'll trap over here. It's all good." But Eddie, he wasn't going to let it go because he knew that this guy was poaching, and this guy, again, just left him very unsettled. When Eddie gets home, he calls up the game wardens and he tells them about illegal trappers on his land and how he saw illegal bobcat hides and other things that were all out of season. Of course, the game warden that he calls is thinking, "Oh, great. Now I'm going to be wandering around in the woods by myself trying to find these poachers." So this game warden is going to bring somebody along. He's going to use the buddy system, and he's not going to go out there alone.
So it's Officer Bill Pogue who responds. And, you know, it wasn't easy for him either because, like you said, he wanted to use the buddy system, but the first couple of people that he called up, they didn't want to go. We don't really know why they said no, but it might just have something to do with having to traipse around the woods looking for poachers. I mean, it could be dangerous. So then he called up a guy named Conley Elms, who said he would accompany him out there. But again, they're just trying to enforce the law here.
It doesn't matter if you're a game warden or a regular patrol officer. If you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're having to engage with armed citizens, this can go badly really quick. These two game wardens, they actually end up spending the night at Eddie's house and eating breakfast with him in the morning because, I won't even say it's a small town. There really isn't a town there. There's nothing. It's just people that live on the land. Eddie is friends with the game warden, so they're a community.
These two game wardens, they really didn't have much information when they went out there. So while they were staying at Eddie's place and Joanne told them about Claude Dallas, then you had Eddie filling him in saying, "You know, I really think you should be careful. This guy threatened me and he's armed."
Now on January 5th, Claude is out there at his camp and a friend of his named Jim Stevens is bringing him mail and extra supplies for the winter. He's about to dig in and stay out there for the season. Now, before you walk up to his camp, you have to fire off a couple shots from your gun, and that alerts him that you are friend and not foe. So Jim Stevens is there from mid-morning until the afternoon, and that's when the game wardens arrive.
But that should tell you something right there. If you don't know about this warning system so that Claude's aware that you're there and can make ready for your arrival, then that means if you catch him unannounced, then he will shoot you.
Yeah, that's the whole reason for it. So it's kind of a dangerous guy. So these two game wardens, they find Claude's camp and they see that he has bobcat skins. They see that he has unregulated traps, but that's sort of a warning, really. It's a mild offense. But they do want to ask Claude about his license and whether or not he had gotten a license to deer hunt or do any kind of hunting out here. Now, it's obvious that he had some bobcat pelts, but Claude said that they were from somewhere else, and gave them kind of a weird excuse, and then told them that all he had was deer meat. Now, it's claimed that Officer Pogue had actually tried to enter into Claude's camp. Claude got very upset and told him that he needed a warrant because this is his home. And that's kind of sparked this altercation. And you have a house which a police officer needs a warrant for. But if you're out camping in the woods, that is not considered your home. And if a police officer has probable cause, which in this case, the game wardens are seeing pelts and traps, which they interpret as, well, you could be hunting out of season. Well, that gave them probable cause to go through Claude's camp. And Claude, he's not okay with this. What happens next is up for debate with some folks, but Claude Dallas claims that the officers threatened him and that he had to defend himself. Claude will pull out his .357 and shoot the two officers. After the officers are incapacitated on the ground, Claude will pull out a .22 caliber rifle and place it behind each of their ears and give them a kill shot.
So you said there's some dispute about what happens here and why, but what we do know is that Claude had three weapons on him. He had a .22 trap pistol, he had a .22 rifle, and a .357 handgun. There is debate about how this exactly went down and why, but we do know that Conley never drew a weapon. And it really comes down to whether you believe that Officer Pogue would have drawn his weapon to threaten Claude Dallas or not.
Now, Claude's friend, Jim Stevens, was not far away, but he claims that he did not witness the first two shots. He was facing the river at the time, and he spun around, and he only saw the end of the altercation, but not how it started.
But it's when he asks his friend Claude, why? Why did you do this? Claude's answer is pretty interesting. His answer was, I swore I'd never be arrested again. They were going to handcuff me. And he also said, this is murder one for me. So I would say, even though this is debatable in some circles, if you go by his own friend and his statements, it certainly sounds like Claude knew that he did wrong.
These are game wardens, which essentially they're police officers. They have the right to arrest you and detain you. Claude knows that this isn't going to go well for him, and he is now thinking of ways to dispose of the bodies. And Jim, who has just witnessed him shooting two police officers, well, he's not about to tell Claude no when Claude says, help me move this body. They take Officer Elm's body down to the river and toss it in. Claude had suggested cutting the bodies up, but that would be a little messy and leave a lot of evidence. So instead, they just decided to drag it down to the river. And for some reason, they decided to take Elm's body to the river, but then take Officer Poe's body back to Jim's truck. Guess they wanted to mix up where they put these bodies to throw off the trail. Claude also took out a can of kerosene and poured it on all of the blood spots on the ground and set them on fire to destroy evidence.
And this is something that I guess isn't shocking. You always hear about friends willing to do things for other friends. It doesn't matter what it is, they have their back. And Jim Stevens is here helping to cover up these murders. And now they're taking Officer Pogue's body to a man named George Nielsen, another one of Claude's friends, who owns a local bar in Paradise Hill, and they're talking to him about, hey, can you help us get rid of this body? Jim and Claude are telling him, this is self-defense, but we still need help. So they get to George and Liz Nielsen's house at 11 at night. So they give him this story. Now, they have some hope here with him because George is one of those guys that always runs his mouth about how much he hates law enforcement, how much he hates cops and game wardens, all of that. So it doesn't take much convincing.
So Jim Stevens is with Claude at George's house, but he's been just thinking about getting the hell out of here this whole time. He really didn't want to help dispose of these bodies. Claude is terrifying. And now that George has offered to help Claude, Jim's able to leave and it doesn't look suspicious.
So George helps Claude quite a bit here. He lets him use his truck. He gives him money as well as some supplies so that when he goes on the run, he can be on the run for a while. And it's about 5:30 in the morning when George drops Claude off about 15 miles away. But Justin, before we go on, what did he do with Officer Pogue's body?
Well, he took it to a coyote's den and buried it in a shallow grave.
So just a few hours after Jim got away from the situation, he went to see Liz Nielsen at the local hospital. And they were on the same page. They were both thinking, we need to go to the police. And they met with the county prosecutor to explain what happened. Now, this is interesting, Justin. Claude had these friends. He had Jim, he had George. They both helped him. But now, Jim, George, and Liz are now talking to the police and telling them everything they know.
They don't want any part of this. And Jim and everyone involved here, this is the difference between somebody who helps you dispose of a body because they're a friend and somebody who's doing it because they're frightened of you.
Mm-hmm.
Jim didn't wait days or weeks. Jim immediately wanted to contact the authorities, but he wanted George and Liz to be on board with this because he didn't want them to get in trouble either.
And I think this does go a long way towards proving that they only helped Claude because they were afraid of him. They say, we helped this guy. We helped him dispose of the bodies. We helped him escape. But Jim's explanation is that Claude had snapped. And I don't know about you, Justin, but did he really snap? I mean, I guess that's one way to put it.
Because here's a little background on Claude. Claude Lafayette Dallas Jr. was born March 11th, 1950. He was born in Winchester, Virginia. How very appropriate. He spent his adolescence and teenage years in Ohio in a very rural area. His father, Claude Sr., worked as a dairy farmer, and Claude was the second son in the family of nine. Claude's father would teach him trapping and hunting at a very young age. And Claude's father, he couldn't be bothered with laws or hunting licenses. He taught Claude Jr. how to shoot geese and sell them, and a lot of illegal practices and poaching.
His own family had taught him this and said, this is how we do it. This is what we do. And we don't care about the laws. You know, they come and go, but we have traditions.
And his father bought him a new rifle as a present on his 16th birthday, but this was for not smoking cigarettes. It was sort of a thank you for being a good kid and not smoking, you get a rifle. Claude would eventually graduate from high school in 1967. When he turned 18, he was registered for the draft. It was the Vietnam War, but he didn't want to go fight for his country. So he went out west in 1968.
Well, he wasn't the only one who didn't want to fight for his country. And this is a very controversial thing. And in fact, you'll hear about it even today, hear people complain about draft dodgers.
He would end up earning a reputation for being a very hard worker, being an outdoorsy fellow, and having a hatred of the government. In 1973, the FBI caught up with Claude and arrested him for failure to report draft dodging. And they had a hard time charging him and prosecuting him because they could not prove that he had received his draft notices. Guess it wasn't registered mail. So they ended up dropping the charges against him.
Yeah, who knows? But either way, that's a pretty good defense. I never got the memo.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
But this is really about the time that he became a trapper full time. And if you read up on this, you'll find out that he operated in the Idaho, Oregon, and Nevada regions. But while he did have a license, he wasn't using traps that were legal. Like you said, his traps, they were dangerous. So a trash trapper. You know, this whole story, Justin, reminds me, there's this old Western show that some people may have heard of. It's The Rifleman. And they had an episode about a mountain man who didn't want to abide by laws. He had his own way of life, and he causes a bunch of trouble. But there's something about this that I think there are definitely pockets in America, in the United States of America, where people revere this and say, never give up your way of life. Don't bow down to the government.
He's just a man living out in the wilderness that just wants to be left alone. I can appreciate that. I really can. And I think that getting arrested and having to be put behind bars for what mostly is victimless crimes is completely unfounded. And I have my own opinions about that. But it seems that most of the time when we put somebody up on a pedestal, such as Claude, for being a mountain man who doesn't want to abide by the rules and laws set forth by our government, well, we usually don't apply that same logic when it comes to somebody that's selling loose cigarettes out in front of a convenience store, or somebody who's just driving down the street and has a legal license to carry a gun. We don't apply the same logic to other people who probably just want to be left alone by the police and the government. But Claude, well, he's a different breed.
He's a different breed, but also, you know, if you, depending on where you get your information from, there's an author named Jack Olson, who I'm sure some people are aware of, and he wrote a book titled Give a Boy a Gun. In that book, he details, based on interviews, how Claude would treat animals, and it's not pretty. We're talking about real abuse here, hitting cows, dogs, you know, with 2x4s, you name it. So this is not a guy who would gain much sympathy from most of the public, because we don't believe this is right. So when you talk about a guy that's abusing animals and is most of the times that he's out there hunting, poaching, then who's really going to be a fan of this guy except for those diehards in small pockets of the United States who are like, live your life, don't worry about what the government says. Most of us, we want some rules. We want some regulations.
he will build up a rap sheet all throughout the 70s, illegally baiting traps, using traps that kill other animals unnecessarily. He will get fined. He will get tickets. He will not get animal tags or deer tags when he's hunting. Again, he will be fined and ticketed over and over and over again. In fact, he probably, if he ever legally hunted or trapped, it was probably by accident and not intentional.
That's the reputation too. That's the reputation that you read about. The other thing he would do is he would travel to Canada by river while his brother and Jim Nielsen would go through the border crossing. So he would sneak in, hunt there, and sneak back out, essentially floating around customs.
Don't we have problems with that when other people do it? Anyways, so at this point, Claude is on the run, and this is going to be an interesting case for law enforcement to track this man down. He doesn't spend a lot of time around other people, and he is a self-proclaimed mountain man. So he's not easily trackable. They can't go check his credit card records or his phone records or anything like that. He doesn't have the normal means of tracking somebody.
Now, after the prosecutor learned about Claude Dallas and his crimes, he contacted Sheriff Tim Nettleton, and he contacted the FBI also. So it's on January 7th when a news helicopter spotted Officer Elm's body in the river.
Now, the FBI and law enforcement, they have witnesses here. They have a lot of evidence, but they know that this is going to be an uphill battle because this just all happened out in the woods, and it's going to be his word against theirs. So they need to collect all the evidence they can and make a solid case against Claude.
And Justin, we hear it now and again. Someone will say, look, this is a remote area. How much investigation do you really expect to happen? Well, they called in the FBI, and all these law enforcement officers cooperated and meticulously went through the camp collecting all this evidence. And they found quite a bit. Even though a lot was burned up, they found blood that they were able to match to both Officer Elms and Officer Pogue. They also found some shell casings. There were camping supplies. There were, of course, the bobcat skins.
And they're going down to the local taverns and towns to ask the residents if they've seen Claude passing through. And I don't know why they'd be surprised by this, but a lot of the town doesn't want to talk to them. A lot of the town sees Claude as a hero. A lot of the town thinks that the FBI is overreaching right now.
Yeah, they don't belong there, do they, Justin?
Nope. You're not from around here.
So one of the first places they really search is Paradise Hill. And George Nielsen's barn had a trailer behind it, which is where Claude kept many of his things. They found inside of that trailer about 20 guns and some manuals about combat training.
They put up flyers and wanted posters with a $20,000 reward all over the county and in every gun shop.
Justin, there's this idea that people don't want to go against Claude. They much prefer to side with him rather than the FBI and the sheriff's office. So I don't know about you, but they may not need all these people. I mean, they have Jim Stevens, they have George and Liz Nielsen, and they also find a bit of information which may help them, which is Claude may not be as much of a mountain man as he makes himself out to be, because any chance he gets, he likes to stay at people's homes and have them feed him.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was a real mountain man, he would just be out in the wilderness, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was able to elude law enforcement for 15 months, but if he truly was living off the land, he could have eluded them for years. That's every time you include a friend or every time you go back into society, that's when they can track you. They might not be able to track your footsteps through the wilderness, but they sure can track you when you're back in society.
So there's someone that comes forward and lets law enforcement know when Claude Dallas is expected to return home, and tells them, Claude's going to be staying over at this friend's trailer just outside Paradise Hill. But the thing is, he also warns law enforcement that trailer he'll be in, there are a lot of weapons in there.
As we already know, he's killed two game wardens, so we consider him armed and dangerous.
So the FBI surrounds the trailer on April 18th, 1982, and they let him know, it's time for you to come out. We have you surrounded. Do they get him there?
Claude, he's not ready to give up, so he jumps out the window of the trailer, somehow gets to his truck, gets his truck started, and speeds off. The arrest team, they didn't fire upon him. They just were not in the right place at the right time, I guess. But to me, I'm thinking you could have ended this right then and there. Claude, on the other hand, is shooting at the agents while he drives off. So yeah, this is, they finally will end up returning fire, but it seems that they don't shoot Claude until they're fired upon. And eventually he will pull his truck over and he falls out from the door and starts to do an army crawl through the grass because he has been shot and he is injured. The arrest team can't see him because he's in this tall grass, but they have a helicopter on him too because this is the full force of the FBI and the government coming after Claude. So helicopter is able to spot him, and there are agents all around him. And the helicopter, you know, again, this is back in the 80s. Helicopter isn't able to have radio contact with the agents on the ground. And he was kind of worried that Claude might get the upper hand. But eventually the agents hone in on where he's at and walk towards him. Agent George Kelly will end up making the arrest and telling Claude, thanks for not killing me.
How do you take that, Justin? Because it almost sounds like he's saying, yeah, right, you were going to possibly kill me or something. I mean, they had him completely surrounded and he was shot. So
I think Agent George Kelly meant it as in he could have taken down the first guy that came upon him, but they would have gotten him eventually.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm just glad they got him. So this trial gets set up fairly quickly. I mean, we're talking about from April until September. So by September 15th, 1982, Claude Dallas goes to trial.
Yeah.
And this is a big deal in Idaho. They say it got national news coverage. And then, of course, in the towns around there in Owyhee County, you had people debating this and saying, oh, you know, this was a misunderstanding. He was just defending himself. And other people saying, no, he's a murderer. But then there is a group of women who were attending the trial, and they labeled themselves the Dallas Cheerleaders.
No relation to the football team, but Claude Dallas Cheerleaders.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder, Justin, what did Claude plea?
Wow. He's going to plead not guilty to two counts of first-degree murder. He's going to claim that it was self-defense. He's going to claim a lot of things.
Yeah, he's going to put this all on Officer Pogue and say it was Officer Pogue's fault that he got aggressive and he had no choice but to defend himself. But the prosecution has a good point here, Justin. No matter what Claude Dallas claims, how the heck does he justify shooting both officers in the head when they were already incapacitated or already dead?
If they were no longer a threat, and then he gives them each a kill shot, you can't really justify that.
Well, that may be, but there is one, I guess, significant thing that happened during this trial, which is the jury was not allowed to know about Claude's previous illegal trapping. They couldn't hear about his history.
That's weird, because in a lot of cases that involve police shootings, all we hear about is the even the victim's rap sheet and why it was justified. But when it comes to Claude Dallas, we can't hear about all of his previous arrests and engagements with the law. Okay.
So you have the defense saying Claude Dallas is a good man. They also said he didn't have a criminal record. Why? Because the prosecution couldn't bring up any previous offenses. I mean, this is almost like they're handing the case over to the defense and saying, it's your ball, run with it.
And one other aspect of this case is, for most of us on the outside or looking at this, we think this is open and shut. There's no problem here. So the prosecutor that was assigned this case, he was new. He was fresh. And this is kind of a gimme case. This is sort of an easy case that they give the new prosecutor. They say, hey, you know, you need your first murder trial. So this prosecutor is never prosecuted a murder trial before. Not to say he couldn't do it, but that's just one more element to consider.
So Claude gives his version of events. And according to him, it was Officer Bill Pogue who was threatening him and allegedly said, you can go easy or you can go hard. And that meant Pogue's like, well, if you want me to kill you, I will. But Claude, he didn't want the officers to go into his tent because he had illegal kills inside of his tent. He had bobcat and deer inside of his tent that he didn't want them to see. So he said he wanted to see a search warrant.
That's not how that works.
Well, what does the jury know, right?
Yeah.
But it's during testimony when Claude says where Officer Polk's body could be found. And it was in that coyote den. But he said he couldn't remember where he had buried the murder weapon. And they found that weird because he knew where Officer Polk's body was, but not the murder weapon. So while this should have been an open and shut case, it really wasn't.
The jury hears him admitting to where this other officer's body is, and they think, oh, well, he's trying to help. He's informing us where he put a body so he can give closure to the family of the slain officer. I don't know. It's weird.
I can't make any sense of it, Justin. I think it's because in the time we're living in and where we live, this is just alien to us. If someone had killed two officers and it was because they didn't want those officers to go into their tent, that's not good enough for me. I don't understand how this isn't first-degree murder. But according to the jury, well, they feel like he's being helpful. And they convict him of manslaughter, not first-degree murder. One of the jurors had said they thought Claude had acted in self-defense. So here are the total convictions here, Justin. He was convicted of 2 counts of manslaughter and 1 count of concealing evidence and using a firearm. Now, this does mean that he's going to serve time. I mean, each count had a 10-year sentence. So 1983, he's sentenced to 30 years in prison. So the downside is he wasn't convicted of first-degree murder for killing these officers who were doing their jobs. But the upside is he did get 30 years.
The judge wasn't as sympathetic as the jury.
That's right. Judge Edward J. Lodge had said that the murders were unjustified and morally reprehensible. And he also went on to criticize the jury. Now, some said that this would have gone better had they been allowed to run 2 trials. But, you know, there are costs involved with that, right?
Yeah. And again, this is rural America. They don't have, they don't have an unlimited budget here. So they're trying to make this, they're trying to bring justice to Claude Dallas fast and end this quickly to bring closure for the families of the slain officers.
Now, one of the issues with having just 1 trial for these 2 murders, and that's what I would call them, murders, is that the prosecution really didn't get to hammer home how Conley Elms, Officer Elms, was shot and hadn't even drawn his weapon. And this is something they say if they had had 2 separate trials, they could have really gone into that and hammered it home. Now, Justin, is that really how you see it? I mean, you've been on a jury before. Is there something to be said for, you know, trying to remember all the details of the case? Or can you say, well, the prosecutor should have been better with his closing arguments?
I think this was a milder form of jury nullification, and I doubt it would have mattered if they would have been able to hammer that home. Now, the only thing that I could have said might have gone differently if they had 2 trials for each of the murders, is they might have gotten a different selection of jury members who might have been more sympathetic. But apparently up there where this went down, they really didn't like the government and law enforcement. So they felt like Claude was being railroaded by the government.
So it might not have mattered. I know what you're saying. You know, if you have 2 juries, maybe you increase your chances of having a jury convict him properly.
Yeah.
But then it's doubtful maybe because of the area we're talking about.
They would have had to get a change of venue and a whole other jury pool. And then I think they could have done something with this. But again, they thought this was open and shut. They didn't think that this was going to be an uphill fight. And everyone was pretty surprised when he only got manslaughter charges.
Now, something disturbing happened after the trial. The judge in the case, someone killed his dog and threw the body onto his front lawn. I don't know about you, but it seems like Claude had defenders who were unhappy with the judge's comments.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't leave a note, but this coincided with this case, which was a very high-profile case. So we can infer what we will.
So Claude got 30 years and was eligible for parole at some point, but that doesn't even matter because just 39 months after being put behind bars, Claude disappeared from a Boise prison. And this is quite a story in and of itself, because how did he get out?
It's said that maybe one of those Dallas cheerleaders had been in communication with him and brought him some bolt cutters somehow, which I'm like, you've gone to a prison, Aaron, and visited somebody. Don't they search you for things like, I don't know, bolt cutters?
Well, you know, and here's the thing. I think it's like anything else, Justin. It depends on which prison you're going into. And I bet there are prisons that are just not as well run as others. So Claude disappears. He's on the run for about 11 months before they catch back up to him. But there's a whole investigation about this that we'll have to get into, because there are so many questions about how he would have had bolt cutters. The fence, it was cut open very neatly, as if someone had been able to take their time. And I guess people who know say, no, if you're trying to get out, you just start cutting away and you get out. It just didn't seem right. The officers who saw this, the fence that had been cut open, they said it didn't look right. It didn't look like someone who had escaped prison. So what they ended up with were two perfect triangles that were cut into the fence. They also didn't find any footprints, even though there was a rainstorm before.
They did find his glasses. They were in a parking lot 350 feet away from the field where the fences were. Had some evidence that this is the way he ran off.
So the corrections director, Al Murphy, talked to the former warden of California's San Quentin prison about investigating this. And Sumner did, but his report, it went missing. And it eventually resurfaced in 2008. And it matches up with the theories that were running around amongst law enforcement that said they think that Claude Dallas simply walked out with visitors. And this report makes it seem like, yeah, that was definitely a possibility. In fact, I would say proof of this is that after this all happened, they changed the way visitors went in and out of the prison. And they actually posted a guard at the door, so there's no way anybody could just slip out anymore.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Do you have this investigation that says maybe Claude just walked out with visitors? Well, the prison officials were like, no. You know, he somehow tricked us, and you know, it was 3 hours before we even found where he got out through the fence. So there was some dispute there, but definitely there's some suggestion here that maybe prison officials kind of covered up the walkout by making it look like Claude Dallas had used bolt cutters to escape.
But it's definitely fishy that he was able to get out of here in any capacity without help from guards or outside folks.
There's nothing proven here. We can't say that he definitely just walked out with visitors, but it's definitely possible. And you can understand why the prison officials would say, oh, no, he did this. We didn't know anything. He didn't just walk out of here, because it makes them look bad. But the other thing is, if you believe that he made it out, maybe with a little bit of help, then this just adds to his hero status and his accomplishments.
Now, Claude, who is now a escaped felon, he cuts his hair and he heads down south to Mexico to get plastic surgery. He wants to get a nose job so he'll look different. In order to get across the border, he will get an ID from a man who kind of looks like him. You know, it's not a fake ID, it's just somebody else's. And this allows him to get a nose job and a plastic surgery on his chin down in Mexico.
Yeah, this cost $3,000. He had earned the money by working odd jobs. And apparently he didn't look very different, but it was just different enough.
The police are getting tips. He is put on the FBI's top 10 most wanted list. So they're getting leads, and they follow up on one that he's hiding in Eureka, Nevada. And a SWAT team ended up raiding a house, but there was no Claude. Now, it wasn't clear to me, Aaron, if he actually was there or if this was a false lead, but they feel like they're hot on his trail and he's always one step ahead of them. But again, is this more of the folktale or is this just the cops had the wrong house?
Now, Claude ends up meeting with a friend eventually, and his friend, well, he's an informant. This informant knows that Claude is living under the alias Al Schrenk. And Al here has shaved his hair and is wearing contacts and has a mustache. So their plan is to get Claude to a motel that's being watched by the FBI. So they get him there, and Claude goes across the street to a convenience store to get some groceries and talks with the clerks and stuff about Vietnam. And he talks about being in the army for 20 years, which of course is not true.
Mr. Draft Dodger.
Yeah.
But they see their opportunity, right, to take him down.
So it's March 8th, 1987, when federal agents see Claude Dallas at Danny Martinez's house. This is before noon. And Danny's like, hey, it's the first time I've seen him in years. They follow Claude to the motel and then to the store. That convenience store, and the SWAT team has this store surrounded. And this time, they just wait for Claude to step out, and that's when they grab him. Now, Claude immediately says, you know, I don't know what you're doing. They're like, you're Claude Dallas, and he says, I'm Al Schrenk. Now, the police, they have their doubts. This is a guy who looks different, right?
Yeah.
But what they do is they hold on to him, and they run his fingerprints. He's not getting away.
No. They can confirm it's him. And they're going to take him back to court and charge him with escaping the prison and being a fugitive, a whole litany of charges here.
Well, Claude's attorneys say he's not going to get a fair trial in Oahu because of all the media exposure. But really, it doesn't really matter, Justin, because what they end up doing is they had taken a year off because he had had good behavior in prison. And what they did was they just added it back on for punishment. The court ruled he had escaped as an act of self-preservation because Claude had claimed prison guards had been threatening him, harassing him.
Planning his death.
This guy has a lot of good luck.
So he's gotten a double murder knocked down to manslaughter. He's escaped prison, and the only punishment he's gotten is the 1 year off for good behavior has been deducted. Okay. Yeah. This is why people think he's this legendary person.
Well, he does have his prison sentence. And on April 26, 2001, he had a parole hearing. This is the hard part about keeping someone locked up is whenever they come before a parole board, the families of the person murdered have to go and make statements because they need to say, don't let him out. right? But they also have to relive what they went through. And they have to see this person that killed their loved one. They go before the parole board, the families of Ellis and Pogue, and they say, this guy's a psychopath. He's a murderer. Don't let him out. The parole board says, okay, yeah, we're not letting him out. But February 6, 2005, Claude Dallas is finally released from prison. He served 22 years of his 30-year sentence. He was 54 years old. And yeah, his sentence was actually reduced because he had good behavior in prison. This is actually not a thing anymore in Idaho, but it was at the time. Because of the controversy, because of the Dallas cheerleaders and, you know, other things like that, the state had been very secretive about the time and location of his release. Now, what do we know, Justin? We know that Claude Dallas doesn't do interviews.
It's probably better that he doesn't.
Yeah, it probably is better, but I'm sure there are people, especially in the news media, that would love to talk to him and have him explain himself or tell stories about his life, but he just doesn't get involved. I think his distaste for government is almost matched probably by his distaste for the media. He probably just doesn't have any time for them.
Yeah.
Now, according to his attorney, Bill Mock, Claude's probably not going to go right back out and go poaching and go hunting again because apparently his health had declined while he was in prison. And because the other work he would do is basically cowboy work, he was probably not fit enough to do that either.
So he doesn't exactly ride off into the sunset in a blaze of glory, more of a uneventful petering out.
But something interesting happened in December 2008. There was a local Idaho man who was using his metal detector and got a hit. He found the handgun that was used to shoot the officers, Ellis and Pogue.
Which he's already stood trial and been tried and convicted. There's no real double jeopardy here, so it's a little too late. But it's interesting that he did find the gun.
Now, we had talked about how Claude has his fans out there, people that just, even though they don't know him, just tip their hat to him. They appreciate him. They have a lot of admiration for him. Then there are people who are on the other side and say he's a murderer. He's a double murderer. So his case is kind of almost like a folk hero case. And there's a movie, a song, and some books about him. And the one pro-Claude book is Outlaw, The True Story of Claude Dallas. And then there's one described as an anti-Claude book, but it's Give a Boy a Gun by Jack Olson, who's a very accomplished writer. So I can't imagine it's anti-Claude. It's probably just a book about Claude Dallas and
the facts,
the way he lived. Well, it's all getting put down in the book. So I can only imagine the disappointment or even the rage that those in law enforcement had after this trial, after Claude Dallas just simply got manslaughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really should have been an open and shut case. And I guess it really says more about the area than anything else, that there are juries that would sympathize with Claude over the game wardens who were there to do their job.
Yeah. And I think this was not as serious as Claude made it out to be. I think he probably would have just been given a citation or a ticket, but his pattern of behavior and his attitude and perception of government, he didn't snap. This was his reaction. This was his response.
Never miss an episode of Generation Y. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. Our TikTok is at Gen Y Pod. Our Instagram is at Generation Y Podcast. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.